MatchFit USA.
MatchFit USA.
Examining the state of American soccer.
Examining the state of American soccer.
Welcome to the MatchFit USA podcast. Here is your host, Jason Davis.
Welcome to MatchFit USA podcast number 2. This is Jason Davis. Once again, attempting to improve every time I do this. Hopefully number 2 is more organized than number 1. Hopefully it runs a little bit smoother. I'm going to start off here with a little bit of an outline for today's podcast. First, I want to look at some headlines, some things that are happening on the American soccer scene, what's in the news. I think some of you know what we'll be talking about first. Number 2, and segment number 2, we're going to take a look at the Media Watch. Got a couple things I want to go over there. Segment number 3, I'm going to call that Next Step. A couple of things, maybe one or two things that soccer in America needs in order for it to get over that hump or make a little bit of a gain in the American sports consciousness, get it a little bit of a buzz. We'll call that Next Step. And segment number 4, I'm going to call that Looking Ahead. You got a couple of stories, developing situations, things coming up in the near future that will affect American soccer that we can go ahead and take a look at, review those. So let's start off with headlines here. Top headline, as it's been for the past month or so, is David Beckham and the Milan saga. I know we talked about this last week. We're going to talk about it again because it's still in the news since the last podcast. The developments between the war of words between Milan and the Galaxy has been fantastic, if you ask me. Lewicki's comments have been hilarious. I don't know how much of it is posturing. I don't know how much of it is actually his true feelings. Milan is shooting back. It's quite the saga. Wanted to go ahead and take a look at the timeline of Beckham's Milan experience, his little Italian sojourn, so to speak, going all the way back to October. In October of 2008, the Beckham to Milan loan deal was already being talked about as possibly a permanent deal by some in the media. Nobody on Milan's side or Galaxy side or even Beckham himself had made any mention of that. But there certainly were some that thought with Beckham going to Milan in January that he may not want to come back. And obviously now we know that that's the truth. In November, Beckham made sure to tell everybody that he was coming back, that his Milan loan was just that, a loan, just a way to stay in shape, keep himself top of mind for Fabio Capello on the England squad. In December, the Milan players, some of the bigger names, Kaká being top of that list, made it clear that they thought the Beckham loan deal was a good one. Now, obviously, some had questioned Beckham's abilities after spending the last year and a half in MLS, and obviously MLS doesn't have the best reputation for the quality of play, so there were already some that were questioning why Milan would even bother bringing on a player who wasn't playing in a top league. The Milan players defended the loan deal. Now that who knows why that was. Maybe they saw something. Beckham started playing, you know, for Milan in January, played well, made an impact, certainly. In January, towards the end of January, Beckham admits that maybe he'd like to stay in Milan, and that perhaps going back to the Galaxy wouldn't be the best situation. Milan, that same time period, end of January, admitted that they wanted to keep him, that this loan deal, they didn't want that to be a temporary situation, that they wanted to go ahead and acquire his services permanently. In February, Beckham makes the comments that playing in MLS can be frustrating. Now, for a world-class footballer like Beckham, it really came as no surprise that he would say those things. And this was right around the same time that he made the comments. I believe it was in the same setting that he made the comments that MLS was 10 years behind Europe. Now, if you read the blog, you know my take was that was a bit of a backhanded compliment on Beckham's part. Most around the American soccer circles have taken that to be a giant slight against the league. Whatever your viewpoint, I think Beckham didn't necessarily believe that he was disparaging American soccer when he made the comments. On February 11th, the beginning of February, the so-called Beckham lawyers were called in. At least that was the reported stories, that Beckham had brought in his Manchester lawyers in an attempt to find a way out of the Galaxy deal. Nothing really came of that. There were some reports that the Milan bid was going to be in the neighborhood of £14 million. We since know that probably wasn't the case, because if it was £14 million, the Galaxy wouldn't have reacted the way that they did. In the beginning of February, February 4th, Beckham comes right out and says he wants to stay, doesn't want to go back. There wasn't any hints of it this time. He clearly stated his desire to stay in Milan. On February 4th as well, stories came out that Milan had called Bayern Munich to ask their opinion or for their advice on how to make the Beckham deal go smoothly, how to acquire his service. And I don't really understand why they would call Bayern. Just because Bayern had worked out a loan deal with Landon Donovan didn't really mean that Bayern had any insight as to how to deal with MLS. They had not indicated that they wanted to keep Donovan at that point, and they still haven't, as a matter of fact. No matter what Klinsmann says, it doesn't seem that there's room on that squad for Donovan, especially with the way he's playing right now. But anyway, February 7th, the first Milan offer is turned down. The reports really didn't indicate that there was any specific dollar amount or pound amount or euro amount that Milan had, it wasn't leaked, as a matter of fact. And it was only later on that we found out, or that it was reported, that the offer was only $3 million. Right around that time, Beckham's getting ready to tie Bobby Moore's England cap record, which he did on the 11th, playing against Spain. And that same day, with USA playing Mexico, Don Garber comes out and sets a deadline of February 13th for a deal to be done. MLS's position was that the Galaxy needed to move on, get things settled, that the season was on its way, that players were in camp, and it wasn't fair to the team to have the Beckham situation hanging over their head, which is certainly true, but we're still, it's February 22nd, and the situation is still hanging over the Galaxy's head, and they looked horrible last night, by the way. On the 13th, the deadline that Garber had set, nothing happens. There is no deal done. The deadline passes. Stories are written that say the deal's dead, that Beckham's coming back, and that Milan never even bothered to make a second offer. And the Galaxy, Leiwicki states, the deadline's done. We're not doing this anymore. Beckham will return to the Galaxy. Shortly thereafter, Milan just comes out and says, we're still confident that a deal will get done, that the deadline is arbitrary and a negotiating tactic, and that they were basically going to ignore the deadline. On February 20th, I'm sorry, excuse me, let's go back to February 16th, Galliani comes out and says that there's progress being made and that they expect to acquire Beckham shortly. This is what set off the war of words, because Tim Leiwicki immediately responded with his own take on the quote-unquote progress being made, that there was a deal in place, that something was going to happen shortly. Leiwicki gave quotes to an Italian newspaper that indicated there was no second offer, that the previous offer was ridiculous and was completely ignored by the Galaxy, and that he was not going to be taken for a ride, that's his quote, by Milan. And here we are, February 22nd, as I've said, yesterday, or in the last couple of days, I don't have the exact date, Milan says, we're not increasing the offer. There is no revised offer. There's not going to be any more money for Beckham. And that's where we stand. The situation still goes on. There are those, once again, just right like after the deadline last week, that think that the deal is dead, or have written that the deal is dead, and that Beckham will certainly be back in a Galaxy uniform. I'm not convinced yet. I don't know that it's not dead. I just can't believe that this is the end of the saga. There's still time for something to be worked out. There's not a lot of time, but there's still some time for something to be worked out, and you have to wonder exactly what. While I'm glad that Garber, well, Laiwiki specifically, but I'm glad that the MLS has put their foot down and not let Milan roll over them, especially if the reported amount of $3 million is the only offer that Milan submitted. I don't know that this is completely over with yet. What caught me as funny is that Galliani made a comment that in the United States, we look at transfers as a commercial enterprise, a commercial transaction, where in Europe, transfers are technical and only for the play on the field. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. I'm not familiar enough with the history of European transfers, specifically with Milan, because that's the team in question, to make a comment on whether or not Galliani is lying or speaking out of the other side of his mouth. But it's impossible, with the amount of money and the amount of marketing dollars that have been gained by Beckham's presence in the United States and his time in MLS, it is unfair of Milan and Galliani to believe that MLS and the Galaxy would sell Beckham at a price that is only based on his talent on the field. And if that is the case, I'm not sure $3 million is even fair for that. But regardless, Beckham is more than just a footballer in the United States, and I'm sure the Milan know that. And they know that they're not only gaining a football player, they're gaining marketing clout. They're selling shirts. I mean, it's obvious. So Milan's, I guess, trying to pull one over on the Galaxy. I don't understand. It was interesting comments, and it definitely was. I took it as a complete slap in the face to the league and to the Galaxy. So we'll see what happens going forward. Like I said, I don't think it's done. I don't know that we've seen the end of the verbal back and forth, which I hope not, because it's entertaining. But let's move on. That's enough about Beckham for this week. Maybe we'll have more next week. I don't know. Second thing I wanted to talk about in the headline section was the news that came out actually yesterday that Maurice Adu, who's currently with Rangers, American international, had turned down an offer to be loaned out because Rangers he's not getting minutes in Glasgow, and that's a problem for him, obviously. And Rangers came to him and said, "We'll loan you out. We'll send you somewhere where you can get first team minutes, where you can get matches." And he turned them down. He flat out said, "I want to earn my spot here. I don't want to go anywhere else." He seems intent on making his mark with his club, and while that's admirable on his part, I think as American national team fan, U.S. national team fans, we're a little torn about it. Do we want him to sit on the bench at Rangers, no matter how much quality training time he's getting? There's a balance here. We want him to get first team minutes. He's one of our young, up-and-coming players who can seriously impact our national team going forward, especially coming up next year. He's probably going to play a fairly large role, but it's hard to know how much his development is being stunted because he's sitting on the bench. I'm not sure. I like I said, I think it's completely admirable on his part that he wants to do this at Rangers, that they bought him for a reason. He wants to show them that they made the right decision, the right investment. We'll see that. We'll see if Rangers gives him a chance. I certainly think he has the talent, and I don't understand if DeMarcus neither him nor DeMarcus Beasley can seem to get quality minutes with Rangers. Headline number three. Moving on. Good for Maurice. Moving on, let's talk about Landon Donovan, because it's the other loan issue hanging over the head of MLS right now is Landon Donovan at Bayern Munich. Played second half this past week. I'm sorry, actually, that was yesterday. Played the second half, came on for Podolski, I believe. I have not yet seen the match, and I have yet to see the highlights. Not that, from what I hear, Landon would be any of the highlights. Byron got beat, which is certainly not good by Cologne. From what I hear, Landon didn't make much of an impact. He had one defensive play, clearing a ball off the line. It doesn't seem to bode well for a permanent move to Byron, especially with recent comments by the Byron brass, that indicated that perhaps he's too old. 26 is old in footballing terms, and we have to keep that in mind, especially with the amount of money that MLS is going to ask from Byron for Landon's transfer. MLS is right to value him at whatever they value him. I've suggested $15 million. I think that's probably accurate. I think he's worth that to some clubs. He may not be worth that to Byron. Byron has a glut of options at the striker position. So there may not be room for Landon on that team in the way that it's currently constituted. So it looks like Donovan will return, which might not be the worst thing in the world. He still has an opportunity. Even though 26 isn't young, it's not old. He still has an opportunity to move either in the summer if MLS decide that they should cash in and sell him then. I'm not sure, you know, if his valuation then will be a hindrance to his sale or not. But he could also move after the season's over. So let's hope that if Donovan does come back, he plays well. This is, let's hope, for the U.S. national team's sake, that he goes and plays well and comes back and play. I'm sorry, that he comes back and plays well as we go through qualifying. But let's also hope, for American soccer's sake, that he moves on when he can and makes an impact in Europe and drives the profile of American players higher. All right, that's headlines for this podcast. I'm going to go ahead and take a break, and I'll come back with this week's Media Watch.
Match Fit USA Media Watch.
Okay, Media Watch for this week. What has seemed to be the biggest instance of soccer in the media this week, the most talked about thing in the media this week, is this piece from a show called Red Eye on Fox News. Now, I first of all want to make it clear that I am not upset by this debacle or what this unfunny piece of video. I had never heard of the show before this came to light. I know one of the people on the actual panel. I think he has been in some things. Somebody pointed out he was in the Sierra Mist commercials, which, you know, oddly enough, run during MLS broadcasts. Sierra Mist is a sponsor of MLS. These people are not funny. Their comments are not funny. Their comments are disparaging of soccer, but they're disparaging of soccer in such an idiotic way that I almost think we should ignore it. The only reason I'm talking about it is because it is top of mind. It is making the rounds. There are people that are upset about this. There are soccer fans who take offense at the terrorist soccer player connection that is used in the piece of tape. I mean, the fact that these people can't seem to grasp that soccer, even in this country, is a game that's supposed to bring people together and want to connect two things that have nothing to do with each other. And I think even at one point, one of the panelists brings up the shooting of the Colombian player who scored the own goal against the U.S. in 1994 as a reason that the United States should not be attempting to bring the World Cup. That's the whole situation. The whole thing is related to the fact that Sunil Gulati indicated that Barack Obama's election could be a boon to the United States attempts to bring the World Cup back to this country in 2018 or 2022. But I did want to talk about this just for a couple of moments because it's funny, not the actual show. it's funny what these people say because it's so ridiculous. So let's go ahead and take a listen here, a couple of things. This is just one piece of audio I wanted to share that came in that came from one of these idiotic people on this Fox News show.
We need to stop death before we start bringing in people who are basically terrorists into this country to start playing. Every single country where people are kicking a ball around, that's where the terror starts.
That's so ridiculous that I'm not sure it even warrants comment, but I did. It is soccer in the general news media, and there are so few instances of that actually happening that I thought we should go ahead and point it out this week. Ignore it. You know, if you want to send an angry email to Fox News, I can't really blame you for that. We're a community of people, soccer fans, that seem to get a little up in arms about some ridiculous things, and that's been pointed out. Is it a slight against soccer, a slight against us all? I guess. It's a slight against soccer that is masquerading as comedy, or the other way around, comedy masquerading as a slight against soccer. I don't really think either one is a problem. This show's never going to catch on to the point that anybody should really be worried about what is said on it. Now, if you saw the same thing come out of, you heard the same thing or something like it come out of the CBS Evening News or Good Morning America or a show like that, then we might have a problem. Then I think actually it might even be a help to soccer in this country, because the mainstream media would pick up on the controversy and give soccer some desperately needed attention. But all the time I'm going to waste on this ridiculousness, on the Fox News nonsense. We're going to drop this. Maybe there'll be more tape next week, and we can have more fun dissecting what is not funny relating to soccer. Something else I wanted to talk about this week is ESPN's efforts to get soccer into their marquee show, SportsCenter. If you've watched SportsCenter over the past couple of months, you may have noticed a little bit of an uptick in the amount of soccer coverage that there is. There's not in actual coverage. They're not bringing in these analysts to talk about Champions League and MLS and all these various soccer related happenings in the world, especially in America. They're not talking about that. They're just not. Highlights of USA Mexico, especially because that game was on ESPN2, of course. Not a bad job with that. I actually watched those highlights. They didn't seem to disparage the game as much as they usually do. The snide little comments that make it clear that they're not necessarily happy that they have to talk about soccer, a game that they don't believe relevant. I'd rather talk about college basketball, which bores me to tears. But I did want to talk about their attempts at soccer on SportsCenter. If you were lucky enough to see Ronaldo's goal against Blackburn yesterday, you know how fantastic that was. It made ESPN's top 10 plays. I think it was in the middle somewhere. Soccer fans would argue it should have been number one. In fact, I think number one was a hockey play, which kind of burned me up a little bit. But Ronaldo's goal makes the top 10 plays. And as much as I like Scott Van Pelt and think he's a funny guy most of the time, there wasn't any attempt to give any credit to what Ronaldo did. It was he did some kind of wacky British accent while talking about eating prawn sandwiches and some other nonsense like that. So not much of an attempt to recognize the greatness that is involved when something like that happens on a soccer pitch. That was a fantastic free kick goal by Ronaldo. So for ESPN to give lip service to soccer in places like their top 10 plays or even their bottom line, and then to have their anchors snidely dismiss the game, little offhand comments, I don't know if there's anything that can be done about that. Probably not. I mean, they seem to have a lot of latitude in the way that they present their highlights. So I'm not sure that there's anybody at ESPN that's going to pull them into an office and give them a little bit of a dressing down because they didn't give soccer the proper respect. I'd like to think that that was possible. And I have heard, I don't have the name here, but I have heard that there are some higher-ups at ESPN that are passionate soccer fans. that may be part of the reason that soccer is making more of an appearance on ESPN. We've obviously, most of you know that ESPN was involved in the bidding for the EPL rights in England. This most recent round, obviously they lost out to Sky. There's still kind of low-level rumblings that something between Satanta and ESPN is going on. Whether or not that happens, I don't know. It might be good for soccer in America. But there's, regardless, the fact that ESPN got priced out of the EPL rights in England means nothing for the American market. We're talking about ESPN covering the sport here. And as far as I know, the international rights are due up next year. So we'll see if ESPN continues this trend of covering the game just a little bit more. Maybe we'll see some of their anchors actually give the game a little respect and not butcher names. There wasn't any butchering of names on the top 10 plays last night, or yesterday, or whatever that was that I saw this. But there was certainly not a healthy respect for how fantastic that goal was from Ronaldo. All right, that's going to do it for Media Watch this week. Coming up the next segment, we're going to do this next step idea that I have. So hold on.
Match Fit USA Media Watch.
Okay, next step. A couple things here that I believe are necessary for soccer in the United States to take the next step. I think the expansion situation, the expansion decision that's coming up for MLS is crucial to how the game's profile continues to grow and how MLS's profile continues to grow. That's specifically the issue, is how MLS can make its mark on the kind of a crowded sports landscape. As I've mentioned before, as I've looked at in depth, we're talking about a country with so many different team sport options for fans to get involved, to fall in love with, to become passionate about, that MLS is facing an uphill battle trying to break into that into that group, into the time that fans have to give to their sports. Fans can get exhausted. The more sports you follow, the more time you give to your sports, the less room there is for something new to come along and break in. There are sports fans that follow all year round: baseball, football, basketball, even hockey. I would argue that soccer is very close to hockey in terms of its place, not in terms of media coverage, obviously. Obviously, with hockey's history, ESPN and the rest of the sports media outlets cover hockey because it's been here for a very long time. But I would argue that soccer is right there on hockey's level in terms of the amount of passionate supporters that follow the game, based in different parts of the country and all that good stuff. But for this next step, it's important that MLS picks the right city. I'm pulling for Portland. I don't have concrete reasons necessarily, although the supporters there and the automatic rivalry with Seattle, I think, are important. Rivalry, I've talked about this as a recurring theme of mine. Rivalry brings in casual fans, and Portland and Seattle in the USL has been a fantastic rivalry. Going back soccer history, something that the United States generally lacks. Seattle and Portland have that, over the past 30 years. Excuse me if I'm getting that number wrong, but over a good time frame, there's sports hatred. Just kind of outline that. Sports hatred between the two cities when it comes to their soccer teams. I've seen it mentioned that, if St. Louis gets a team, they'll have an automatic rivalry with Chicago and Kansas City, because that's just the nature of sports in those cities. They always are rivals, regardless of what sport it is. I think that's true to a certain extent, but I don't think it's quite on the level of Portland and Seattle. So I'm pulling for Portland for one of the spots. The second spot, obviously Miami has this issue now where Barcelona is getting cold feet. I'm not sure what that means, and I'm not sure. The economy the way it is, I don't know what Barcelona is talking about, because if they can do that right in Miami, they should be looking at the Seattle season ticket numbers. I mean, Seattle sold over 20,000 season tickets, which is absolutely fantastic. Obviously, that right now MLS is being vindicated in that choice, despite the fact that Seattle didn't have a soccer-specific stadium plan in place. I want to see what these other cities have to offer before I kind of pull for the second city. Vancouver has this BC Place situation. I've seen some recent blog opinion that kind of frames that situation and indicates that their stadium might not be as bad as some of us seem to think it will be. With the way that the stadium can be configured when it's being once it's renovated, because it's going to be renovated whether MLS comes or not, that will give a great atmosphere for Whitecap or whatever their MLS team would call themselves, Whitecaps games. So we'll see on that. I like the fact that Montreal is selling all these tickets, and the rumor is that they're back in the race because of that, and MLS might actually accept the lower expansion fee and blah, blah, blah. Right now it's all rumors, and we don't know whether that's true or not. So we'll see. I think if one Canadian, I don't think that MLS will go for two Canadian teams. There will be at least one American city in the mix, be it Portland, St. Louis, or Miami. If Barcelona is really truly pulling out and St. Louis still has their money issues, I haven't heard anything recently on that, then Portland seems to jump to the front of the line for expansion in 2011. So that's, like I said, it's important for soccer in the United States to take the next step. They need to have the right situation with the right city. Portland, because of the rivalry. Portland, because they would not be competing with an NFL team for headlines. They wouldn't be competing with a Major League Baseball team for headlines. It would be the Blazers, and it would be the Timbers, or whatever they end up calling themselves, for coverage in that city, which I think is important. The rivalry, I've mentioned that already, and we'll go ahead and move on from that. I don't want to be a broken record here. The other thing that we're going to talk about for this next segment is something I wrote about yesterday. That I came across a blog from a gentleman who I don't believe writes about soccer normally, but he chose to point out that perhaps American soccer needs a Dick Vitale-type presence, a promoter, an excitable, loud, boisterous figure in the booth, broadcasting games to bring some attention, to bring some passion to the game. Right now, we're kind of stuck with these monotonous, boring, very technically sound. I mean, you know, as a fan, you want to be told things, you want to learn things that you didn't already know, you want to get some insight into the way the game is played from an expert. But at the same time, you want some passion there. On ESPN, with JP Dallacamera and John Harkes, there's no buzz to the game when you watch it. It's just a match. It's just two teams lining up. Dallacamera will get excitable for a goal to a certain extent, but it's nowhere near Spanish language broadcasts or anything like that. And maybe that's a cultural situation where ESPN and the people in charge of MLS broadcasts just don't believe that that's the right kind of approach to take for an English language broadcast. We'll see. I mean, there needs to be something done. I don't really understand why the blog that I mentioned I read. He specifically is pushing for Ray Hudson to end up on ESPN. I don't know that that would be a bad thing. And like I said, he could be the Dick Vitale of soccer, of American soccer, because what Vitale does is he is constantly promoting his sport. He is loud. He is annoying to a certain extent, and I'm sure a lot of you would agree with me. But you get it's an infectious enthusiasm for the game that comes across, whether you like him or not. And I think that there's something to be said for an announcer being able to bring in a casual audience that might not otherwise check out a broadcast because there's an announcer there who's engaging and who paints a picture for the game. For a fan who might not really understand it, it adds something that can get those casual fans involved. So Hopefully ESPN will get the picture on that deal. I really something that I'm going to try to figure out, and I don't know what the situation is, and obviously with this being the first contract where MLS is actually making money off their television contract, maybe they don't have any control. Maybe they can't tell ESPN what to do, so to speak. But MLS needs to step up, get in meetings with ESPN and try to at least attempt to dictate how the coverage goes, because right now we've already had the development where Primetime Thursdays is now a floating match broadcast, that it's not going to always be on Thursdays. You're going to move it around and try to maximize ratings that way. This is an easy way to maximize, you know, to help with ratings, or at least to give some excitement to the game. If you get Ray Hudson or somebody like him on TV on a regular basis, people will watch. I know that they will. And even soccer fans who might not believe MLS is quality product might watch those games because Ray Hudson is doing the game. I mean, there are plenty of people that watch Gold TV right now who watch the games that Hudson does, partly because of the teams on the field, and Gold TV has good quality leagues that they broadcast. But there's also a segment of those people who watch for Ray Hudson because he is so excitable, so into the game, because he's not the normal standard American broadcaster that we've all become so used to. All right, that's next step. We'll be right back, and we'll finish up with looking ahead. Okay, looking ahead to the next week in American soccer, I think the most important thing, the number one story for the next week, is Houston in the Champions League quarterfinals against Atlante on Tuesday at Robertson Stadium in Houston. I think it's crucial for MLS to do well in the first year of this competition. Obviously, Houston's the only remaining MLS side. And I think if you're a fan of MLS, no matter who you root for, you should be pulling for Houston in this competition. If this was UEFA Champions League and you're a Liverpool supporter, you're not going to root for Manchester United to win the whole thing if you go out. But this is a different situation. In order for MLS to keep growing, in order for MLS to get a better reputation around the world, even in the CONCACAF region, we need to do well. MLS needs to do well in the competition. So let's root for Houston on Tuesday. Let's hope they get a good crowd as well. I hope there's an atmosphere. I know that they're not going to be able to match what Montreal's doing for their quarterfinal match coming up against Santos, but hopefully they get a good crowd. This is the start of Houston's season. If they play well here, they need to get out to a fast start, as this is the home leg of this round. So I'll be rooting for Houston on Tuesday. I hope you will be as well. Coming up, obviously, we're going to continue to, all of us, all American soccer fans, are going to be continuing to follow the Beckham saga, whether or not it finishes up, whether or not Milan step up to the plate and make a legitimate bid, or the Galaxy finally pull the plug on the whole deal. I mean, it seems as though the Galaxy's pulled the plug. As I said in the first segment, I'm not sure that that's necessarily the case and that there could still be more development. So we'll have to see what happens in the next week. Hopefully more, like I said, hopefully more comments from both sides, more of this back and forth. I think that's a good thing for American soccer as well, drawing attention to the league. Whether or not, and I've tried to look into this, it's hard to get your finger on it, whether or not the rest of the world or the European, soccer fans in Europe are looking down on MLS because of this whole nonsense. I don't know. If any of you guys have insight into that, please let me know. I'd be curious to find out. I actually wanted to try to write a piece about that, about how the Beckham Galaxy, Beckham Milan, all of this nonsense saga, all that stuff has affected the standing of MLS in terms of reputation around the world, but specifically in Europe. With Galliani coming out and saying that the Americans view transfers as business and the Europeans view transfers as technical concerns, that can't be good. But I don't know if Galliani speaks for the rest of Europe. I'm sure there's some. I think I've seen a couple of opinion pieces that say that the Galaxy is doing the right thing, standing up to Milan, that they shouldn't get pushed over by Milan. I've also seen recently At least one writer in England believes that Beckham's the one that needs to step up, buy himself out of this contract, and just get this over with. There's a chance that, by the end of the week, we'll find out that Beckham's going to come back and play in MLS until November, and then he'll be off. The last thing that, we're looking forward to, another loan slash maybe transfer saga, is Landon Donovan in Germany. Whether or not there's any movement on that, he didn't play well yesterday, as I mentioned. He will have a couple more opportunities to prove himself. My take on this is that Donovan's more than likely going to come back to MLS because he can't make a transfer to any other European club besides Bayern at this point until the transfer window opens in the summer. There's a chance. I don't have any sources on this, but there's a chance that he could be sold in the summer if he plays well enough and if there are European clubs tracking him at Bayern and believe that he can contribute. A lot of people have suggested a couple of different EPL teams. He could end up in Spain. We know that he speaks Spanish and shouldn't have trouble adjusting to the culture in that regard. So let's watch the Donovan situation. More than anything, what I'll be watching, what American fans will be watching, is how he plays, because the comments and the quotes out of the Bayern camp aren't really going to give us any insight, because with the loan deal coming to an end shortly, Bayern glutted with forward options, and the economy the way it is, they're just not going to pay for him. So we're tracking that. We're tracking Beckham. We're tracking following Houston on Tuesday. Hopefully there'll be some more stories and more news, more things to talk about. I'm going to go ahead and finish up MatchFit USA podcast number two. I want to thank you for listening to this. This podcast is now listed on iTunes. Go to iTunes, search MatchFit USA in the future to get your subscription there. The podcast will be up on the website, on my blog, matchfitusa.blogspot.com. Please check that out. I'm always looking for comments on everything I do, but especially the podcast, because this is not the most natural thing in the world for me. Trying to get better at it. Gotten some good stuff the last time out on the first one. Hopefully number two is better, and I will see you next week.
MatchFit USA, examining the state of American soccer.